person gets to do a disproportionate amount of the work, and that person has been Denise. She really has, from the selecting the beautiful covers for the folders, to making all the arrangements with the hotel, to putting her personal telephone number out with all of us, and come home evenings to 25 and 30 messages on her answering machine, really helped to pull this all together. And for me to work with Denise on this, and I think that it's been a labor of love. We've really enjoyed it. But I truly appreciate how much of the actual hands-on work that she's done. Denise?
When Fran says that this has been a labor of love, she's absolutely right. About a year ago, from a discussion that was started in a board meeting by Diane Rowley, who did a paper on Black women and AIDS, the genesis started for the discussion within the National Black Women's Health Project around what should the project be doing about this phenomenon and its relationship to us, knowing full well that we were going to be disproportionately affected by it. And what you see these 2 days is the result of that little spark that happened in that board meeting more than a year ago. We came together for the same reasons that many of you are working in service organizations and advocacy organizations that are providing services to people with AIDS or advocating on behalf of people with AIDS. Because we saw our people suffering, we saw our people dying in new and different ways. It's not to say that we weren't already suffering and dying. But at the same time, we didn't see the voice that was there to support us, to take care of us, to look out for us. All that we saw were the voices for the white gay men, the voices for the babies, but no voices for Black women. And so what we felt that we needed was for us to come together for the National Black Women's Health Project to convene a meeting of women from around the country, from different organizations, different agencies, women who are leaders who could go back into their communities and move and shake, if you will, to help to create our own voice and to go back and to begin to impact the system in behalf of our sisters and our children and ourselves who are being so dreadfully affected by this disease. The meeting is designed as a think tank, and Fran will go into more detail about the meeting design and the structure. But I do need to say that we didn't bring you here to give you the answers. We think that you have the answers within you, and we brought you here for us to share the answers with each other and to refine the issues, to articulate the issues from our own perspective as Black women, and from there to develop strategies and to leave this organization, to leave this meeting with a clear sense of where we need to go from here and with some commitment, individual commitment, and for those of you who have the ability to commit organizational commitment to make a real change in what's happening in this country in response to the epidemic. I'd like to introduce Fran, even though she introduced herself. Fran is one of these brilliant, loving sisters who has so many wonderful facets to her that every time you meet her, there's another part that comes up that you just want to hug and love. And in addition to that, she always inspires growth. She always challenges. She's always bringing something with her that's a present that helps enrich you individually. So I feel very, very fortunate to have worked with Fran, even though she was in California and she didn't get home. Thank you.
wonderful cosmic quality. She calls you from anywhere, everywhere. You never know which time zone she's in or kind of other location, but she is she's a pursuer, and she tracks us down, and she, you know, contributes and has lent an awful lot of the inspiration for the team, the encouragement and the support. And on behalf of the National Black Women's Health Project, I'd like to introduce our executive director and founder, Billy Avery, and to have her share with you some of her vision about what this meeting is about.
I was supposed to give a welcome, but I want to do something a little different. Y'all know y'all welcome. I want to, first of all, I want to talk about the National Black Women's Health Project and a part of our vision and our mission, that this type of gathering is certainly in keeping with our vision and our mission. A large part of that vision and mission springs from within ourselves. That one of the things that I would like to see you not do today is to think that you are here to help plan for other people. Because that's when we get into very serious trouble. You are here to help plan a program for you. And if you are not in it, or if you are working in a place that you wouldn't want to come and get services, or if you're giving out advice that you yourself wouldn't want to use, then we are all in serious trouble. We become those who are doing for others rather than first unto ourselves. Now, the way we work this in the National Black Men's Health Project, let me just say that this is a different kind of format for us here with this. Our programming springs out of our nucleus, which is our self-help groups, which within that, we use a specific type of process around facilitation, which allows us to talk openly, to share our feelings, and to hook up the feelings and the words so that that makes sense. Now Sharon is gonna, and if any of y'all know Sharon, she is extremely articulate, and she will go into more details around the self-help concept. But you should know that that is the space that we need to be in to do our most productive kind of thinking. Second thing, I want us to, as we think of and talk about AIDS over these next 2 days, is to first think of it as we are planning for ourselves. Please don't forget that. Think about our own relationships with sex partners. And think about how it gets laid in from when we are little children, the whole power and the imbalance of sex, the role of sexism, so that you can understand that you just can't give people advice to go out there and go upside somebody's head. Because it really doesn't work that way, but that we have to do the analysis around how we have been reared, how we have been conditioned, and know that all of our sisters have been conditioned that way. Because sexism is so ingrained in this culture. And don't forget the role, I know you won't forget, the role of racism and how it also plays into, we already knew who was going to be disproportionately affected by this disease. We already knew that this is no new information for us. The other part that is real important that you remember is that we not look at AIDS in isolation from all of the other diseases affecting us. We could be black women here talking about almost anything. We are disproportionately affected by almost every single thing that jumps down. So let us not make the mistake of thinking that AIDS is over here and we do something differently about that than we do about cancer, than we do about diabetes, than we do about any of the other diseases. What you need to remember is one of the cardinal principles within the National Black Women's Health Project is that if we work right on any one disease, we're really working on all of them. And that what it calls for, which has been our teachings all the way from the very beginning, is for each of us as individuals to make a decision to do something differently in your life. Without that first decision, you can't get your blood pressure down. You can't do anything about your blood sugar. You can't do anything about your period. You can't do anything about your reproductive life. You certainly couldn't start to think of doing anything about a deadly disease like AIDS. So I caution you, my sisters, please do not come preparing for others. Please come with your finest mind and prepare a program that is for us. And you can better believe that if it fits our needs, then all other sisters will welcome and love it. Thank you.
Thank you, Billy. It was difficult to design a process that we thought could accomplish what we needed to do here because so much of it is task-oriented. But in the process of trying to work on tasks, we often lose that sense of ourselves and avoid almost looking at the pieces that have to do with why aren't we, or how come I'm feeling this way, or when did this stuff first start becoming real for me. So that while we want to have task group sessions, we want them to be in the spirit of sisterhood with a great deal of personal support. And in that sense, I think that having the size group that we have is very fortunate. We are, when we say a think tank, we really mean to ask questions, to ask the questions. This is the beginning of the process. This is not the end. This is the start. So we're usually on call to be knowledgeable and smart and together and informed and to have the answers. We don't have to have the answers here today. We just need to raise the questions and talk about how we can mutually search for some possibilities that may be answers. And at the end of that, they may not be. And we just have to keep searching and working together until we find out what it is that we want to be for each other and how we can be with each other in this epidemic. So a think tank is really a place where you put out a lot of ideas. And the people who generate a lot of the information about these kinds of group processes tell us that you can put out as much in 5 minutes as you can put out in 5 weeks. If you have that sense that your best thinking will come forward when you have that commitment, it'll come forward when you make the commitment to just put it out there straight and not try to edit it and censor it and modify it and control it, just kind of put it out there. And I think that what we do as a group around think tanking is to recognize that we don't have, all of us, a common vision or a common perspective yet. But by continuing to put our ideas out there, we can develop common perspectives and themes with which we can leave here and begin to speak in voices that will be heard because they'll be consistent. And that we will have each other for support in the terrible, lonely, isolating places that we find ourselves, whether they be in agency boardrooms or offices, in clinics, on street corners, wherever it is that we are, that we can reach out and embrace each other when we begin to develop the themes that we know we're committed to being together on. So the think tank is really to get those ideas out and to begin, I think, to have this network. In your kits, we have a yellow sheet of paper that's behind your agenda. I'm not going to go through this agenda now. We want to go through it after the panel presentation. But the yellow sheet of paper does talk about what our objectives are. And broadly, our goal was just to bring together people so that we could begin to have a network, so we would know. I think I put about 20 faces to voices today. People that I talked to on the phone, I hadn't met, and now I know who you are, you know who I am, and I know that wherever I am, I can call on you. You know, somebody asks me something that's a little perplexing, I can say, oh, wait 1 minute, and come back. I know that I can find you. And that's basically what we wanted to do, was to bring together, to convene a group so that we could focus specifically on Black women. And we felt it was important for all of us initially to be Black women here together. In addition to that, we wanted to talk about how we work in solidarity with women who are living with AIDS. Again, now like Billy said, to do something for them, but how do we work together in solidarity with them? And so we want to talk about what that process is. We want to identify those things on which we absolutely agree, the common themes, the perspectives that we have in common. We need to know what they are. We're going to put them on newsprint. We're going to mess up these pretty walls in here. We're going to decorate this place with all the ideas that come out of the small group so that we can have them before us. And that when we go back to those places that may be lonely and isolating or intense or stressful, that we know that we can take all of this energy with us. And finally, we wanted to develop that voice. People will know, people already know that we're here today and that we're talking together and that we're meeting. And we've gotten calls from people who say, well, I know I can't come to this meeting because we wanted to have some input. Well, thank you very much for offering, but we didn't need any other input, and the input that we have is here, and we hope you will be as receptive to the output as you are to having the input. So that people know that we're here, and they're waiting to hear what it is. They're waiting to hear. They want to know what it is, and it's odd, because I'm sure we've all been saying it, you know, individually in all these places, and speaking in one voice again, that will help to deliver a message. And so we have to work together on that and come up with those things that we think are powerful and important and we want to deliver. We talked to a sister yesterday who had written an article about Black women and AIDS, and a white male came on it and published it. You know? We got to stop that. Mm-hmm. You know? And all they have to do is know that there's a voice out there that's going to speak when that stuff happens. And that when it does speak, you know, there'll be a response. They can't do this without us. This work can't be successful without us. And we need to take our rightful place in terms of all that is going on. So that the think tank process will combine two settings. One is the kind of formal conference-like setting, and we try very hard to get around it, about not having podiums and not having microphones and not having panels and not having tape recorders and all that. And then we decided we would lose so much. You know, it would almost mean that all of us would be so busy taking shorthand that we couldn't focus on what we were supposed to be doing. So we have tried to balance this between panels where we have some information that people have because of the special places that they are. And we have to affirm that Black women are in all those places. And that they're going to share with us perspectives from those places, whether they're in the Centers for Disease Control, the United States Public Health Service, the National AIDS Network, wherever they are, they have some access to information that they want to share. And we're going to have the opportunity to hear them. We're also going to have the opportunity to hear them speak as Black women about what it's like to be in those places and what's really going on in there. So that we'll have good information when we go out and evaluate what it is we need to use and how we need to get it. And then we're going to have small groups. And we're going to ask you to go into the same small group each time so that hopefully there'll be some bonding that can occur within those groups. And in the small group sessions, we will try to focus somewhat on our personal support needs and also on generating those ideas and brainstorming and coming up with position statements and strategies that we feel that by tomorrow afternoon we can leave with and we can support and we can have some idea of how we're going to work on them together. So this, again, remember, is a think tank. Every idea is a valid idea. There is no such thing as a dumb question. You know, you can put it out there. And there's no censorship, and there's no, that's a crazy idea. Because once you say that's a crazy idea to somebody, they may not give you their next idea, which might have been the most brilliant one ever spoken. Mm-hmm. You know, so we really want to be able to think and create and be together in a, I think, a very important and authentic way. We're ready to introduce our first panel. And the only other thing I'm going to say while we're convening the panel and bringing people together is that we're committed to keeping this process working and being on time. And the reason that we have to do that is because, one, the hotel is going to impose it on us. This is our lunchroom, you know, so we can't run over in here because they've got to set up for lunch and then we've got to go to small groups and then come back in here. So before the end of the morning, I'll cover all the logistical stuff with you. But we do really need to make this commitment to be on time. And I know that that imposes some pressure and that it's not our ordinary way of being together. But if you could, if you could bend a little gently with us in this 2-day process, I think that we can cover all the information that we need and get all of it out there without upsetting the routine of this hotel and causing us to not complete the agenda. It's really very tightly organized, and we would appreciate, you know, the moving quickly to rooms and getting back here on time, and hopefully we've left enough time so that your personal needs can be accommodated in that overall structure. So thank you. Denise is going to introduce our first panel. Good morning. How are you? I'm Fran Dory. Nice to meet you. Haven't seen you since New York. Yeah, long time.
Even though Fran and I love each other, Julia, and we think alike, I still disobey her sometimes. And what I'd like to do at this point is ask Sharon Gary Smith to come up and just talk with us briefly for about 5 minutes on self-help and it's how it fits into this process. Sharon Gary Smith. Sharon is the Director of Self-Help for the National Black Women's Health Project.
Welcome to be here. This, in fact, is the first step for some of you who haven't had the experience of self-help from a black woman's point of view. You're in it now. And for those of you who've had the experience of self-help in the way that the National Black Women's Health Project has created and developed it, this just gives you a continuation of that process of working on you first. So I want to welcome you all to the experience again and again and again. I want to also talk about, just for a moment, how critical it is to practice self-help no matter how much or how little time you have, so that when you come up with the ideas that Fran has very eloquently spoken to, when you consider all the issues and all those people out there who are in trouble, all those women who are dying, all those children yet to be born who may, you will think about what it says for you, who may not have all the answers yet, who in fact may not be asking all the questions of those we need to question, and who may have those feelings about what it might be like to not know. That in fact is truly self-help. And I was reminded yesterday riding in a car with Fran and a friend going to eat before the conference began, when the other sister was so pleased that she's walked into bookstores now, and she said there's a section on self-help in almost all the bookstores, and that is a very exciting thing, but that section on self-help still is not really talking about us in most cases. You need to know, and we discovered that the idea about self-help is something we have practiced in our individual ways for a long time, but that the National Black Women's Health Project has in fact developed a model that speaks to what we know best is what are the questions for Black women to come together in small groups all across this country and out of this country and began to analyze and review and to think anew about what are the issues for us, for each and every one of us, for me, that haven't been answered. Where are the places that I'm still stuck? And how can I get the support of other Black women in doing the most creative thinking, in using my best mind, in feeling my strongest needs being met in the company of other Black women? It is empowering. It is very fulfilling. And it is frightening at first. But there are so many other fears that we already have, that the ability to start talking, really talking to each other, not about it, but about what matters, will answer the question of what needs to happen around AIDS or cancer or any of the other issues. And we'll also start talking about powerlessness and a lack of validation and a sense of alienation and a place of isolation for almost all of us as Black women, regardless of where we sit, in or outside the bureaucracy, and will give us a new way and a new place and a new space to talk about, this is what I know to be true. So if the goals of this conference, as stated in your packets, are to think about the development of a network that will look at, speak to, and address the question of AIDS, I, from personal experience, do know that that is happening within the National Black Women's Health Project, and that it is happening for you where you stand and where you are in DC and all the other cities where we have sisters who say, I want to be the one who is personally committed to doing something different for me this time and is willing to join with other frightened sisters to begin to talk across those barriers that have separated us and to begin to look at the issues from the inside out. So sisters, let's begin again. Let's start doing something different. And let's do self-help from the time the gong rang until the close of this session tomorrow, and do it in a very deliberate way far after. Please feel free to consider us as a resource and as one place that has already created the space to begin to do this and every other kind of work. And if, in fact, this hotel management rushes in here on time to start setting up lunch, that in itself will be a precedent for the Howard Inn, and I want to be able to see that. Thank you.
Speaking of a hotel, that makes me think of a point that we need to clarify for you. We know that it's a contradiction for us to have a cash bar this afternoon. It is not consistent with the way that the National Black Women's Health Project works. We normally don't do that. However, it was either pay $500 for the room or $50 for the cash bar. I'd like to call Cheryl, Missy, and Donna to the podium at this time to join us. And as they're coming forward, I'd like to just talk a little bit about, self-help means, in part, self-disclosure, sort of testifying. And I'd like to just share with you why I do this work. And I saw a documentary, and in the documentary they were saying that, they were still saying that this was essentially a white gay men's disease. And then they flashed, it was the strangest documentary I'd ever seen, then they flashed a holding ward in a hospital in Miami, Florida, of babies with AIDS, and of course they were all Black. And I knew then that this was ours, that it was going to impact us very greatly. And I did what most Americans, and probably most of Black Americans, have done. I pushed it away. And so I was in the US Public Health Service, and I was at the process of leaving the regional office, deciding where I wanted to go next to do what I thought would be some important work, because the work that I felt that I was doing was not important. And so I moved as far away from the ability to do anything about AIDS is possible, I moved to Utah, Alabama, this rural community of about 2,200 people, which is only just now getting its first AIDS cases, where people who are coming home to die. And I was there for 2.5 years and moved to Washington last year, finally having come to grips with the fact that I had to do something, had to be involved in this process, not knowing what I would do, not knowing if it would make a difference, but just knowing that I had to do something. I came here, I went to Whitman Walker Clinic, which for those of you who are not from Washington, is a gay men's health organization. It was originally a sexually transmitted disease clinic, and they have expanded into this multi-service AIDS service organization. It still has its white gay male focus and priority, even though they are providing a number of services that sisters are benefiting from on a sporadic basis. And I said to them, well, I want to be a buddy, and I want to be a buddy for a black woman. And a buddy is a person who essentially befriends and supports a person with AIDS. And they said, fine, and I went through the training, and they never called me back. And in the training, as I was listening to the stories of people who had been buddies before, it were all these horror stories about how dreadful it was, and you know, the midnight, staying up at night, and having to watch people die. And so I was really, I incorporated an additional amount of fear around what it would mean to be involved with a person with AIDS. And I think that's the place where almost all of us start with AIDS, and that's the fear. I held on to that fear for a long time, especially having had it reinforced in the training that I went through. I found my own buddy. She was in the shelter with Damien Ministries. She's Cheryl, right here. And in the process of meeting Cheryl and Missy, the fear went away. And I have not had that awful, dreadful experience that these white men were talking about that they had had with their buddies. What I have had is one of the most enriching experiences of my life. What I have had is an education in how I and we as black women throw away our sisters. What I have learned, and I guess, you know, I probably knew this intellectually, that, but it never registered in the gut, that there is this whole segment of our own folks that for whatever reason or reasons, lives aren't going well. And when their lives start to not go well and they cope in inappropriate ways by illegal activity to raise money, by using drugs, we just throw them away. We just discard them. And then those of us who claim to be political talk about how the system throws us away, but we never recognize how we throw them away. And what I also discovered in this process was that I was missing the opportunity to be with some incredible women. These are the most beautiful, loving, caring, giving, intelligent, thoughtful women that I have ever met in my life. They have touched me deeply. They have enriched my life. It's been a pleasure working with them. I have found nothing that has been a detractor in my life in working with women with AIDS, nothing. I actually feel like maybe I should pay them.
What can I tell you?
With that, I'd like to introduce June Duff Butts, who's the moderator. June is with the Commission of Public Health. She's a family counselor and sex therapist. She was trained by Masters and Johnson, and she was also the author of the column in Essence Magazine, Sexual Health, that was also an award-winning column. To my far right is Donna Bradfield. Donna works with Second Genesis, their street outreach program, and she'll tell you about that. Then we have Sabrina, who we lovingly call Missy, or Miss Thang. And next to her is my buddy and dear sister, Cheryl. And Cheryl and Missy are in the support group with me. And it is a mutual support group.
Thank you. Good morning. I want to say how beautiful you look. You really look inspiring. And I'm so glad already this little brief interchange has gone on. Without words, Cheryl let you know that she is all those things, intelligent, giving, enabling, and all of that, resourceful. And I have her to thank for allowing me to be in this very happy spot of helping them bring out the things from their lives that you need to know, that we need to know. And then helping us focus on where we all need to go. And I like being a part of this, and I don't want to delay it anymore. I want to just simply say that I'm here to facilitate. If you need to join that process, and you will, certainly, please, when we do ask you to join in with questions, comments, do that, to make it personal. Because anytime you learn something, it's abstract. You've got to make it personal. Then it stays with you. And there's no point in coming here in this kind of beautiful togetherness without taking something of your own self, putting it through your filter, so that it'll fit when you go back home to your work, to your family, and that you'll be better off from having gotten to know these women just a little bit. And so this is a rare opportunity. And I want to say, should we start with Cheryl first and ask Cheryl please to come? And if I join in to ask you a few more questions, Cheryl, bear with us. We thank you. All right, then. Okay.
Yeah, I'm not comfortable.
All
right.
It's easier to sit. Come back here. Okay.
Right. My name is Cheryl. I'm 31 years old. And it's sort of, it's a blessing being here, and then it's not. Because this time last year, I had been first diagnosed at DC General Hospital, which I'm sure is a community hospital. I was diagnosed clinically October the 12th, 13th, but I had started getting sick as early as May, June of 1987. And every time I would go to the doctor, they would tell me I had a stomach virus, some kind of virus, and send me back home, feed me antibiotics, and send me back home. In the meantime, I was still dealing with a drug problem I had. I was still getting sick. Plus, I was working two jobs. And it got to the point where I just knew in me that something wasn't right, and what the doctors were telling me wasn't right. And I had requested that they do an AIDS test because I had been reading. I wasn't stupid. And I knew I was in that high risk behavior group. But they never gave me my results. Test was taken in June, retaken in October, and I didn't find out till then. And it was hard for me to deal. It got to the point where if it hadn't been for my mother and my sister coming to get me and just physically taking me back and saying we don't want her back, I might not be here. And even though they admitted me, the treatment that they serviced upon me was not fit to me for a dead dog. They told me what I had. They gave me no follow-up programs. It's like, you diagnosed not with, you have full-blown AIDS. No AZT, no how can we help come to this program. It was like they told me, got me well enough to get on the street, and that was it. So even though they technically helped me get back on my feet, they did nothing else. I had to get out and find the shelter that I'm now staying at. I had to find a doctor that I could be comfortable with somebody that I felt was going to treat me right. And even though I'm staying at Damien Ministries, you know, it hurts me and it disappoints me and it frustrates me because we have no, not one or two, we have no black volunteers, no black women either. And see, Damien Ministries is really structured toward helping gay white men. They do not know how to deal with me being black, being a woman, and the problems that I be going through. And you know, they have no type of programs for us. And I can go out here and give speeches and say this and say that, but still, we still have no black volunteers. And it's not to put down white people, but I feel more comfortable with black and sisters that understand or at least are aware of the things I be going through. So it's like, you know, I'm really caught between a rock and a hard place because they did help me. If I was waiting for black people to help me, I'd still be in DC Gent. And so I can't really say I'm mad with them because they do the best they can do. Somebody had to stop. But as far, I mean, black people are aware of it now. You have to be almost pretty ignorant not to know about AIDS in some form or fashion. You got to, if you don't know about it or heard about it, you ain't been on this orb. And I just, you know, I'd go out, try to talk, and try to make people aware, but it's only me. And I do stay sick. Since I've been diagnosed in October, I've been admitted into the hospital with 3 severe cases of pneumocystis carinii pneumonia, a viral infection around my heart, and other numerous little things. Last Friday, I had an asthma attack. I didn't know whether I was gonna be here or back in the hospital. But, and I can't say, you know, I got a strong spiritual belief, but it's something in me that's making me want to fight and survive. But I can't say, well, here's the secret in my pocket, because I don't know. I'm still trying to figure it out. And in a way, by me getting AIDS, it made me more aware of opening up to other people, be willing to accept love, accept help, not being burst and feel ashamed and whatnot, and because it's real hard on my family. I come from a large family that do live in D.C. And when they first found out, they were scared. They didn't know what to do. I didn't know what to do. They isolated me. But I forced myself to go over there and talk, bring it up. They didn't never want to talk about AIDS, so even though I was diagnosed with it, they did not mention. And I just kept going over there just saying, you're going to have to be realistic about it. You know, they wasn't ashamed of me or anything. They just wanted to sweep it up under the rug. And I wasn't going to let them do it. When I first was diagnosed, my mother and father and my sisters and them were serving me out of paper plates, cups. Didn't want me around my little nieces and nephews. Really didn't want me over there, but they knew it would be hell to pay if I couldn't get in it. And I just kept bringing it up, slowly but sure. Now my mother can say AIDS and say my daughter got it, and all that old stuff you hear about is not true. She got her good days, and I got my bad days. My father is a diabetic, so maybe his illness sort of enlightened her some. But I have been around people that if you say you got AIDS, you can clear the room real quick. And you know, I be saying we need more support groups, we need more black people coming up, but it's true. Because I mean, I'm not saying, yeah, we need money and we pass the hat a lot. But it's just being able, if you're in the neighborhood, if you want to pick up the phone and call, you know, I was just thinking about you, if you got a problem. I might not can't solve it for you, but I do got ears to listen. And you know, if you're going to the store or something, you feel you want anything, I'm going out. If I don't have a car, and I'm not supposed to be out in all that weather, because I do get leery sometimes, especially in the wintertime. getting on the bus, people got colds and all that. But see, I have a drug problem, and I know I do. I'm recovering. I can't say I'm recovered. I'm still recovering. And it's hard to deal with my drug problem and my AIDS problem because those are really two separate things. But they do connect. They do bypass each other some kind of way. And it is that to me right now is more important almost than my AIDS is getting off the drugs, because the drugs kill me quicker than the AIDS will. So that's like, you know, I know it's a battle. And so far, I'm winning most of it, but I do have them days. But with AIDS, I've met people. I see people that I didn't think, you know, if they found out I was somebody that abused drugs, or you a junkie, get away and all that. But I found Denise, or we found each other some kind of way. I found Missy, you know, other people that I've met, even the people that do run Damien Ministry. But as far as black people go, it's not enough, because they still sweeping it up under the rug. Somebody gonna have to drag it out. And I realize that means they're gonna have to talk about things they don't like to talk about. But they're gonna have to do it. And it don't necessarily have to be in an open type form or anything, or, you know, not a whole lot of emphasis, but somebody got to make a start some way. So since y'all trying to see if they're gonna come in here for the buffet,